Blog Talk Radio.
And all access football inclusive.
Hello, everybody. I'm your host, Daniel Moglione, here for College Football Insiders Radio. And we are back after a couple of weeks' hiatus. We had the Thanksgiving Day weekend, and last year our man, Bo Knows Football, filled in for me. And I got to give a shout-out and a thanks for Bo for doing that. But today we got a packed show. It is awards week. The bowls are coming up. The Heisman Trophy is on Saturday. We're going to break all of that down. We're going to have our guys coming on, Justin Van Fulpen and Kelron Sykes, to break down the awards position by position. We're going to go over who's the best guy and who's the best prospect. Not always the same answer to those two questions. Also joining us to talk a little NFL draft is our man Joe Everett, who is going to give us his risers and fallers in his stock report for the college football season. I'm also going to give you a sneak peek ahead to the BCS Bowls. I know they're about 4 or 5 weeks away, but it's never too early to talk about those big games. But we're going to start today with my man Lloyd Ribner from the Road to Pasadena show, my Big Ten guy. Lloyd, how's it going?
It's really good to be here talking to you today.
And great to have you on, Lloyd. And let's start off with the latest big news, which is Urban Meyer stepping down part due, and it looks like this time it's going to stick. You know, we went through this last year, and he's doing it again. He's stepping down, and it was kind of an interesting press conference, I thought. You know, he seemed to kind of say it was time to go and that he wasn't completely in it, but then whenever he was specifically asked, he was very quick to say that this year was just like every other year in terms of him having his heart in it for the Gators. What are your thoughts on Meyer stepping down in Florida here?
Yeah, Urban Meyer got the Brett Favre treatment from ESPN this week with his own little segment on the Bottom Line. You know, personally, I think that Urban Meyer really wasted Florida's time all year this year and basically went out of his way and lied to his recruits who had committed either to their program or elsewhere when he stepped down last time and told them that he would be there for the foreseeable future. And then here it comes a year later, and we're all, you know, once again shocked that he's stepping away from the team. This time it seems to be more on a full-time basis that he won't be coming back. But I have to say, if I'm a Florida fan or a Florida player, I feel a little bit jobbed by him right now.
Particularly a player, particularly if you're one of those guys who did come last year and got reassured that he would be here and everything. I get that. I mean, I think those guys have a right to kind of be a little happy, but that, you know, to some extent that is the nature of the game, and it happens throughout all of college football. Typically we're talking about guys leaving recruits or leaving freshmen going for bigger and better jobs elsewhere, not to step down. You know, I thought one of the most best stats and most interesting stats was the one that, you know, it comes up because they're playing Penn State in the bowl game. The fact that if Joe Paterno retired at 46, which is how old Urban Meyer is, Joe Paterno would have retired in 1972.
Yeah, it's really unbelievable to think about the way the stress, you know, as was the issue last year, and just the familial toll, as Urban has alluded to this year, have really affected him as a person. The fact that Joe Paterno has been able to do this for as long as he has really, really shows even more impressive than we previously thought. I mean, it's really unbelievable to step back and look at the career that Joe Paterno has when you take things like this into consideration.
Yeah, it's really an interesting juxtaposition, the fact that you got, you know, the 46-year-old is the one this is going to be his last game, not Joe Pa.
Yeah, Joe Pa assured us that he's coming back.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. So now, you know, Urban, I mean, I got a feeling he's going to be back. You know what I mean? I don't think this bowl game is going to be his last game ever as coach. You know, that's my opinion. Let me ask you, let's say 2-3 years down the road, where do you think we're going to see Urban? Will he be, you know, still retired, just being maybe a TV guy? Will he be in the NFL? Will he be back in the college game? What do you think?
Yeah, I think that, first of all, you know, certain people are talking about Denver and Tim Tebow, and I just think that's absolutely ridiculous. I don't see any way possible that he's going to Denver right off of leaving Florida like this. I think that he's going to take I think he's going to take his time. I think he's going to really sit and wait for that perfect job opportunity, maybe 4 or 5 years down the line, like when Bill Parcells left the Giants, he waited for that opportunity that he had. Basically, if Urban Meyer wants, if a job is open, it's his. He doesn't have to go in and display, have a wonderful interview or do anything like network. If he wants a job, it's in college especially, it's pretty much more or less his. So I could see him really waiting for, his body to recuperate, to spend time with his family, and then eventually wait for that perfect job.
And where do you think that'll end up being? Do you think ultimately will be the NFL calling, or could we see him maybe coaching back in the SEC similar to Saban, just at a different school?
Yeah, I could see him pulling not necessarily that he went to the NFL, but a Saban or a Spurrier where, after a certain amount of years, he decides to come back and it's time. And I think he's one of those guys similar to a Spurrier who's won based on obviously he won at Utah, but part of his success at Florida, you can't deny the amount of talent that they've had. And you just can't do that in the NFL. You have one first-round draft pick and that's it. And he can go into just about any recruit's living room and shake the hands and assure somebody that he's going to take good care of them and pretty much bring in the type of player that he wants. So I think that he can pretty much get any job in the country, and I wouldn't be surprised to see him back in the SEC one day.
Yeah, I agree with you, though, in terms of there's no way he's going to Denver Broncos. I think everything he said in his press conference, and if he turns around and takes the Broncos job, I think that just obliterates any credibility he has left at this point. I think the other intriguing idea is here, does this kind of put Brian Kelly on the watch a little bit and give him a little bit shorter leash there at Notre Dame? Could that be revisited?
It definitely could be revisited. People have always discussed how Urban Meyer's, quote-unquote dream job is, coaching the Golden Domers up there at Notre Dame. But I don't think that really – if that's really your dream job, then the being the coach at Florida won't hold you back. I'm not saying that Florida isn't a destination job. It's one of the great jobs, especially currently in college football today. But if that's your dream job, then I don't see something holding you back from it.
Yeah, I agree with that. That is true. We're talking to Lloyd Ribner here from College Football Insiders as well as NFL Draft Bible. You can read his work at NFLDraftBible.com. I know, Lloyd, you had a busy week this week. You got a chance to talk to Chip Kelly on Monday, a couple of current players like Mr. Sherrod from Mississippi State, Wisniewski from Penn State, Tolzien from Wisconsin. I know we're going to be posting those interviews up shortly this week, as well as a few others from the William Campbell Trophy, which we both attended Tuesday. You'll be going to the Heisman Trophy on Saturday, so it's a busy week for you college football-wise. Let's stick with the Florida thing a little bit here and the coaching vacancy. Who do you think stepping in there? I think there's a few interesting candidates. The two guys that immediately come to mind, their former coordinators, Dan Mullen on offense, Charlie Strong on defense. Could a Bobby Petrino flip teams? Could a Will Muschamp be in the mix here? Could Gruden, could this be the type of Florida college job that Gruden would be interested in? Could they go the Utah route and bring Kyle Whittingham in? I've even seen Schottenheimer, the son from the New York Jets, the offensive coordinator. He was a former Gator, a backup quarterback there. Who do you think could end up being the next guy? If you had to get odds, who would be your favorite?
My favorite, has to be Dan Mullen, the head coach of Mississippi State. To be honest, ever since he's left Florida, the offense really hasn't been what it was when he was there. He has the experience of being a head coach in the SEC. He says that he loves the place that he's at right now, but who isn't going to say that? I think that he is probably the odds-on favorite for the job. I don't think Charlie Strong, the head coach at Louisville, has enough head coaching experience. Kyle Whittingham from Utah. That's an interesting name, just based on the connections. Urban Meyer came from Utah, as did the athletic director Jeremy Foley. Obviously they're going to make the usual calls to the Chris Petersons, the Gary Pattersons. I don't know. I really don't see John Gruden coming to college for one reason. John Gruden to me is a preparer. He's a practice guy. He loves putting time in the film room and things like that. And you, as you know, Rich Rodriguez can testify to, you don't get an unlimited amount of time to coach your players in college. So I think that's one of the things that's holding John Gruden back. And I would say, like, probably the real outside name, I would say, is Will Muschamp. You know, he has a background in the SEC when he was with Georgia and LSU. And I know he's the head coach in waiting at Texas, and that's a nice, cushy job. But who knows when Mack Brown's going to retire? I know he had a poor season this year, but I don't expect that to continue in Austin. And I could see him eventually, you know, maybe not this year, but eventually just saying, hey, I am sick of this head coach and waiting title. If somebody's going to give me a quality job, I'm going to jump on it.
And the Florida job, as you said, is one of those destination jobs. It is a quality job, and it might be too much to pass up. And, Lloyd, I'm with you on Gruden, man. I just don't see it. I know they had the rumors with Miami. Some people were saying it was close to being a done deal, but I think Chucky would just lose it if he had to deal with these college freshmen coming in and the type of attitude that some of these kids might have. I don't know if he's got the patience to deal with an entitled 18-year-old who thinks he's a hotshot recruit. I just don't see that. And, you know, speaking of Miami, how much does this hurt them? I mean, Dan Mullen was a guy they were definitely targeting. It's got to be difficult now that, you know, maybe you were hoping you were going to be the plum job. Now, all of a sudden, Florida opens up in your region, a clear cut, a better job overall. If Mullen doesn't end up at Florida, could he be a candidate at Miami? I think, you know, Tuberville's another potential guy, maybe an Al Golden, a Randy Etzel. What do you think's going on down there at the U?
Yeah, I mean, we spoke about it, I think, last week. We were off the air. We were discussing how Miami was the best job out there, and that really still had its flaws, given the facilities, off-campus stadium, things of that nature, private school, so they don't have the type of funds that a big state school does. And especially now that a Florida school that has a better program, especially currently, has better facilities, and basically is an all-around better job, Miami's kind of taken a back seat. And I think right now is kind of looking towards a different type of candidate. I think Randy Etzel, the UConn coach, who's led them to the BCS game, which we can discuss a little bit later, Tommy Tuberville, and, you know, I think Kevin Sumlin is a name that could really pop up there from Houston. I think that Miami might have to wait until Florida makes its decision and hope that one of those bigger name candidates doesn't get the job at Florida and falls to them.
Yeah, that's pretty much, I think, what they're going to have to do unless they immediately settle for somebody who's not even in the conversation at Florida. And finally, also this week, another job that opened up was Pitt, where the Juan Stash era has ended this week at Pittsburgh. I thought a very disappointing era there at Pittsburgh. Like we talked about off the air, I was never a huge Dave Wansat fan as a head coach in the NFL, but I thought coming to college, coming back to Pitt, his alma mater, not in the weakest of the Big East, BCS conferences, the Big East, not a lot of competition, not a terrible recruiting spot there in Pennsylvania. You're near Ohio, but he stepped down. Who do you see there? I mean, Golden's a guy that people talk about, the Temple head coach. I think a couple interesting coordinators that I've seen mentioned are Mike Stoops there at Florida State, who was the first-year defensive coordinator there, and a first-year offensive coordinator at Oklahoma State, Holderson, who did a fabulous job with the Cowboys.
Yeah, I think, you know, you have to be disappointed with what Dave Wansat has done there. Granted, he has elevated the program to more along the lines of what they wanted than what was there before him. But he's, you know, he's, like you said, he's in the weakest BCS conference. And when a program like UConn has come from basically completely off the radar to win that conference, and you can't do that at a Pittsburgh program, which has some tradition and has had success in the past, I have to say that you're just not doing your job. As far as Al Golden goes, I just don't see him taking another job. I think he's just sitting there and waiting and waiting and waiting for Joe Paterno, you know, hoping that he doesn't turn into the next Greg Schiano, where he kind of has a little bit of a letdown after his rebuilding job. but I don't see him taking another like quasi rebuilding job and hoping that he can do the same thing, because if he can't, then that Penn State opening for him eventually, whenever it does become open, is no longer there. I really like Dana Holgorsen from Oklahoma State, an unbelievably explosive offense this year. He doesn't have any connections to Pittsburgh, you know, as playing or coaching, anything like that. But the word is that out of Pittsburgh is that he is right atop their list in regards to men to contact to fill that opening.
And I said before, Mike Stoops, I believe I meant Mark Stoops. Mike Stoops, obviously, is the head coach at Arizona. All right, Lloyd, as I mentioned before, you will be going to the Heisman Trophy Award on Saturday, first time for you, so I'm sure you're pretty excited there. And is there any doubt at this point who's going to win this award, or are we only going to, you know, wonder to see if Cameron Newton's going to set a new record with margin of victory?
Yeah, I would say the only question about what's going to happen this Saturday at the Nokia Theater really is, will Cam Newton's dad be in attendance? That's probably the biggest question out there. Is he going to be there? And in the envelope where they open up who wins the award, is there going to be a little check in there as well? That's about it. Those are the only questions that might be. I mean, Cameron Newton was by far and away the most dominant player in college football this year. Threw for 67%, almost 2,600 passing yards, 28 touchdowns to 6 interceptions. And then when you look at the rushing yards, 1,400 yards, average 6 yards a carry, 20 touchdowns. And what I find even more impressive is the 0 fumbles. You know, first of all, when you think about quarterbacks running, they tend to fumble the ball. But Cameron Newton's not a guy who shies away from contact. He runs guys over. He's not stepping out of bounds hoping not to take a hit. So the fact that he hasn't fumbled the ball all year while rushing the ball is really incredible.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's pretty impressive what he's done all across the board. And you're right, it's really – there is no challenger. I don't think there's even a clear-cut number two, which is why I think he should run away with this. I mean, could there be some people that hold the off-the-field stuff against him? I guess I'm sure there will be a few. I don't think he's going to get a unanimous, which he should based on his play. So I think a couple people will hold it against him, but I don't think it's going to be enough to keep it close at all. I think he's going to run away with it, and he deserves to run away with it. He's had a Tim Tebow-esque season. You know, I liken him to a bigger, faster version of Tim Tebow, where he actually – you know, can carry even more people with him when he runs people over, and he's got a little extra gear when he gets in the open field where he can run away from people. So he's had just an amazing season. I mean, I texted to you and a couple of people watching the South Carolina game. You know, not only do I think that South Carolina would have beaten Auburn if they switched quarterbacks, but I wondered would South Carolina be undefeated if they had Cam Newton. I think he's that good. He's a guy, if you took him and put him on a bunch of teams, particularly SEC teams, he might lead them to an undefeated season. I mean, if he was on Alabama, if he was on LSU, he's the reason why Auburn is better than those teams.
I 100% agree. You know, when you texted me that, I was pretty much in agreement. I just think not just the stats, watching him is just incredible. He's one of those guys that you just feel like it's must-watch TV when he's playing a big game. Whether it's, you know, he's going to lead his team from behind or just pull off some type of incredibly athletic feat. I mean, there's no reason not to watch him. It really is incredible. And I just want to say I think he is far and away a better football player than Tim Tebow. He's bigger. He's faster. He throws the ball better. I mean, I don't even think it's really close, to be honest with you.
Obviously, you're not in the running for the vacancy there to replace Urban Meyer. Otherwise, you wouldn't say that because that's burning some bridges down in Florida.
Absolutely not. The other thing I have to say about the Heisman Trophy Award, I definitely, as you said, don't think he's going to win it unanimously. But I feel like there are going to be certain, you know, voters, media members who decide to, you know, make news themselves instead of covering the news and not eat and just completely leave him off the ballot. There's going to be somebody or a collection of people who are going to completely leave him off due to what
that's the way That's the way to get yourself on ESPN, you know, be the guy that lifts them completely off the ballot, and then somebody's going to get you on to talk about why you left them completely off the ballot. All right, Lloyd, quickly, before we go, we got Justin waiting on the line to come on to talk about some of these awards tonight, particularly on the offensive side of the ball. I wanted to ask you a couple quick questions on the BCS. And who do you think was the biggest BCS bowl snub? You know, was it Michigan State, who finished 11-1, same record like Wisconsin, same record like your Ohio State Buckeyes, LSU, you know, probably the best SEC team that didn't make it, or was it, you know, the Bluefield Darlings, Boise State, who, you know, 2 weeks ago were worried about can they make a championship game if somebody loses? Now they're not even going to a BCS game.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think Boise State got snubbed at all. As you can see, media members were just waiting for a reason to not vote for them. And once they lost, they just plummeted in the rankings. I think Michigan State, even though I do feel that the SEC teams are more of a quality team, Michigan State is the only one-loss team from an AQ conference who didn't make it. You know, I just don't – you know, they went through so much adversity, you know, the coach having a heart attack, et cetera. The fact that they only have one loss and basically because of a rule within the BCS, that's the reason why they're not at a BCS game. I mean, you know, LSU wouldn't be in this BCS picture if, you know, they had that rule taken off. Michigan State would be right there. They have the same record and basically got shafted by not playing Ohio State this year in the Big Ten, which a lot of people thought was going to be a positive thing for them because they wouldn't have to face them, has really turned into turn back and bite them.
Yeah, I agree. I think they're the team that has the biggest reason to feel ripped off. They didn't play Ohio State, and they actually did play Wisconsin and beat Wisconsin. So, you know, out of that trio, they have a 1-0 record, which is the best record of the group. You know, Wisconsin went 1-1, Ohio State went 0-1. And while I do believe they are the third best team in the Big Ten, at the end of the day, when you look at what they did on the field, they have every right to have a gripe and not be happy that they left out. Finally, a team that's very happy that they did make it, and a lot of people think should have been left out, and that's the UConn Huskies. Do you have a big problem with them making the BCS as the Big East champ?
I have more, not so much a problem with them. I have more of a problem with the rule. You know, the fact that, you know, as I like to call them, the Big Least gets an automatic BCS qualifying spot when they really don't have one program who deserves to have one. When you look at them, I mean, UConn got the spot. Maybe West Virginia is the best team in that conference. But even within that conference, they still did not have successful years. I mean, if you take one of those teams and put them into a different conference, I mean, I can only imagine, you know, the struggles that they would have. I mean, I'm surprised that the spread between the UConn in the UConn Oklahoma game is only about 17 points. I mean, just saying, my BCS pick of the year, if you want to call it that. I don't see how UConn can even handle the talent that Oklahoma has.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about this before. I don't think they should be ranked. I mean, if you look at their season, they lost to Louisville, a 500 team. They lost to Rutgers, a non-bowl team. They lost to Temple, a non-bowl team. They lost to Michigan, a five-loss team. So they really have not had an impressive season. Their one big win was over West Virginia, which gave them which got them into this game. So, you know, I'm not impressed with UConn at all. But at the end of the day, I really don't have that much of a problem because, you know, basically we're just talking about money here. We're not talking about any real tangible playoff spot, championship spot, nothing like that. So, you know, it's not going to bother me that much other than, like you said, it's probably going to end up being a crappy game. But, you know, I don't think any major injustice is being, you know, doled out here. So.
Yeah, it's not like in the NFL where an NFC West team is going to make the playoffs. You know, it's not like they could end up going hot for 3 weeks and knock off some teams. You know, they play that game, it's over, they make some money for the conference, and that's pretty much it.
All right, Lloyd, thanks a lot for giving us some time. And as I said, you can catch Lloyd at NFLDraftBible.com. He's going to be attending the Heisman Trophy ceremony this Saturday. And also keep a lookout for our Big Ten Bowl preview shows coming up next week.
Absolutely. Always a pleasure to be on with you, Dan.
All right, always a pleasure to have you on. Hopefully next time we can do it in person. It's even better that way. Lloyd, thanks, and we'll talk again. Probably a little more Big Ten football coming up down the road.
All right, sounds good.
And that's Lloyd Ribner from NFLDraftBible.com as well as College Football Insiders. Just want to remind everybody, you want to follow us at Twitter, go to Twitter.com/CFBInsiders. Also, go to our College Football Insiders Block Talk account at blocktalkradio.com/CollegeFootballInsiders. We have a lot of great podcasts coming up this week. Yesterday we posted Anthony Costanzo, Sam Acho, speaking in person to those guys in New York City. They were on hand. We also spoke to Sherrard, the left tackle for Mississippi State, as well as Christian Ponder, the two-way star Owen Marisek, Scott Tolzien, Steve Wisniewski, and a couple other guys. So be a lookout for all those player spotlights and podcasts at College Football Insiders, our Blog Talk account. And now it's time for our man, Mr. Justin Van Fulpen from the great state of Michigan. Justin, how's it going? It's been a while. It's been
good.
Too long.
Hey, it's going good, Dan. How's it going with you?
I'm doing pretty good, and, you know, the regular season is over except for one game. We still have the big Army-Navy game, but the big thing happening this week are the awards, and obviously the big one is the Heisman Trophy, but that's not the only one. Let's talk a little bit about some of these offensive awards. I want to get a gist from you, and who do you think, you know, your winner would be? Who would get your vote, as well as who's the best pro prospect among that group? So let's start with the running backs and the Doak Walker Award. We're just going to skip the quarterbacks because that's really part of the Heisman conversation anyway, so we don't want to repeat that. We'll go straight to the running backs and the Doak Walker. The three guys that are up for that award there are John Clay out of Wisconsin, Kendall Hunter from Oklahoma State, and Michael James out of Oregon. Is this really a competition, or is it hands down Mr. Michael James out of Oregon?
Yeah, I think it's, you know, it's like Michael James. I think he's had a great season. Obviously, he's on the, you know, one of the teams that's playing for the national championship there in as far as Oregon. And I think the standpoint is he's a guy who, to me, when you talk about those three guys, you talk about the next level. I don't, you know, see any either three of those guys being, you know, dominant running backs. I think they're all complementary guys. But I think LaMichael James is a guy probably going to be the best, you know, as far as pro prospect out of the three, you know, running backs are up for that award. I think he's a guy who's probably going to come out early. He's a redshirt sophomore, and there's a lot of talk. And obviously the running backs, you know, don't want to, you know, wear and tear on the body. So I think, you know, LaMichael James might be, you know, heading out of Oregon after that, you know, national championship game.
I don't disagree. I've been saying it for a while that keep an eye on LaMichael James. I know he's only a redshirt sophomore, but like you said, you're a running back. What are you waiting for? You don't want to tear up a knee or do something, and if you're ready to go, and it's not necessarily a strong running back class in terms of the seniors, so, you know, I think he's got a good chance to be at least a second round pick. Let's move on to the wide receivers, where we're talking about Justin Blackmon, another Oklahoma State Cowboy, staying in the Big 12 with Ryan Broyles, and another sophomore. This guy's a true sophomore, though, Alshon Jeffrey out of South Carolina. Who do you like as the Biletnikoff winner, and who's the best pro prospect among that trio?
I think as far as Justin Blackmon and for the winner and the best pro prospect, you know, just because of his size, strength, you know, as far as run after catch ability. And, you know, he's a guy who, you know, hey, if you know, LaMichael James or, you know, Cam Newton weren't in the picture, he'd be a real, you know, push for, you know, a Heisman Trophy, you know, right there in the running. You know, he did have the, you know, the run-in with the speeding ticket coming from the Dallas Cowboys, you know, game on that Monday night, which, you know, caused some red flags. But again, another redshirt sophomore who is expected to leave Oklahoma State early, and we probably will see, you know, back-to-back first-round wide receivers out of that university. And obviously last year they, you know, Dez Bryant, you know, was a first-round pick of the Dallas Cowboys, and I think, you know, Blackmon will do the same here this year and be a guy who's probably going to be, you know, in that 20 type of range when it's all said and done at the wide receiver position.
Yeah, I think he will be. He's got a good chance to be a top five guy in the Heisman voting. So he might be the highest vote getter who wasn't invited to New York City. I do think it's close, though, Justin, between him and Alshon Jeffrey, the wide receiver out of South Carolina. If Jeffrey was eligible, do you think he might challenge Blackmon? And would they be in the same range in terms of draft prospect?
I think so. I mean, I think the standpoint is like, you know, with you know, Jeffries, I think the standpoint is where's his, you know, straight line speed, and I think that might
right.
be the only kind of question mark. He's a big receiver, physical guy, and can, you know, go up there and you know, catch the football, and I think he's going to be a great guy. And I don't think, you know, I think, you know, next year is his last year at South Carolina. I don't think there's no doubt about that. So it's definitely be interesting to see, you know, how those two guys compare at the next level.
All right, let's move on to the Mackey Award in the tight end. We have Michael Agnew out of Missouri, Lance Kendricks out of Wisconsin. They always seem to be producing NFL tight ends, as well as Arkansas DJ Williams, one of Ryan Mallett's top targets. Who's your guy among the tight end position?
You know, I think it's, you know, the winner might be, you know, Lance Kendricks out of Wisconsin, but I really like, you know, as far as the Arkansas kid, I think he's a guy who's going to have a great, you know, pro career just in regards to what he can do. He might have to pull a little H back, you know, and be able to move because doesn't have the great height that, you know, NFL teams like, but it can catch the football, you know, a very good blocker, a very good overall athlete. And I think, you know, he's a guy who's definitely, you know, the best as far as pro prospect out of those three, in my opinion.
Yeah, all those guys, I mean, none of them are the traditional, you know, inline type tight end. I wouldn't be surprised this year if we see Kyle Rudolph be the top tight end, even though he was an injury-plagued season, particularly the way you see Gronkowski and Gresham being so successful. Those guys didn't play at all last year and went in as underclassmen, and those turned out to be great picks, more traditional-type guys, bigger guys than the three we just talked about. And then moving to the offensive line, the Outland Trophy, we got Wisconsin man Gabe Creamy, left tackle, another tackle, Nate Solder out of Colorado, and moving on the inside of the line, Rodney Hudson representing the guard position from Florida State. Who do you like there?
I think Rodney Hudson, obviously, you know, could definitely win that award. I think he's just been consistent, you know, over his career and obviously this year in regards to that Florida State. But obviously I think Gabe Creamy out of Wisconsin is the best pro prospect and will definitely be a first-round draft pick. You know, the question to me, well, you know, where does he line up in that pecking order of offensive tackles when we're all said and done and we're, you know, looking at rating these guys. But I think he's still a first-round pick, you know, probably a guy who goes, you know, in that second half of the first round. But still, I think when it's all said and done, you know, will be a guy selected that Thursday night.
And before we move on to the roundtable, just curious, do you think guys like a Sherrod out of Mississippi State or Love out of Arkansas, Costanzo out of BC, you think any of those guys got snubbed and maybe should have been one of the finalists?
Well, you know, I think, you know, there's a lot of great guys that are out there, you know, so as far as those guys got snubbed, I don't think so. I mean, I think, you know, they're all going to be guys who, you know, you mentioned they're probably our first-round picks, but I think, you know, the standpoint of what they, you know, guys have done, you know, in their college, you know, career in this season, I think those three guys were definitely worthy candidates.
Yeah, it's definitely tough with the O-linemen, you know, when they're so close. It's not like you got the stats. You could say, well, this guy scored 5 more touchdowns, so he deserves to go, you know, over the other guy. All right, it's time for our roundtable discussion now, like we do every week, and our man Kellon Sykes is with us again. Kellon, how's it going, my man? It's been a long time.
Everything's good. How's everything going?
I'm doing pretty good. You know, we're talking the awards here, and we're going to continue in that vein and bring up the big one of them all. The Heisman Trophy. I talked a little bit about it with Lloyd at the top of the show. You know, is there even a debate here? Can you make a case for anybody other than Cam Newton? We'll start with you, Kellon.
Cam Newton has played phenomenal throughout the year. I think, you know, he won the Heisman during week 5 of the season this year. And although Andrew Luck has played phenomenal as well, and obviously he's a better pro prospect and, you know, ultimately will be the first pick taken in this year's draft. Cam Newton will win this by a landslide. He's played remarkable. I mean, despite the, you know, the slanders or the, you know, the misconception that he's taking money, the family's taking money, nevertheless, he is eligible to play. And once again, he wins by a landslide.
All right, how about you, Justin? Are you going to throw a knuckleball at us and give us another name?
No, I mean, I think Cam Newton's definitely, you know, the outright winner. You know, I think the question mark is, in regards to Kellon, you know, brought up is, hey, you know, what are those allegations? You know, I think we need some more clarification on things, because I don't think you want to see a Reggie Bush situation. And not saying because, you know, nothing's been found, anything like that out there. But obviously the Reggie Bush, you know, scenario, he obviously never won that Heisman, even though we all saw him accept the award. We saw him play, you know, in college football. I think that always hurts the standpoint of, so if we, you know, find out something happened, you know, two years down the road, we're all going to remember this season that Cam Newton had, but yet as far as, you know, the record books might show differently. And I think the standpoint of is that's going to – I think that will sway some voters, you know, maybe not to be able to – not to vote for him. He'll still end up winning, but maybe not as big a margin as people think.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. I think there will be a couple people that may leave him off the ballot, if not for – if he had no cloud at all covering him. I think, you know, I don't see how everybody wouldn't give him a first-place vote. I guess the more intriguing question might have been, will he still have the Heisman in 2 or 3 years down the road? That'll be interesting to see. I mean, I think it would be naive to think that if Auburn wasn't undefeated and wasn't heading to the championship game, that the NCAA would still have quickly said he's still eligible, you know. But at the same time, I don't have a huge problem with him getting the Heisman. He would get my vote if I had one. Justin, let's stay with you. BCS, which BCS bowl matchup, not including the Oregon-Auburn game, which one are you most looking forward to?
I think the TCU, you know, Wisconsin, you know, game. You know, obviously last year TCU lost to Boise State, and that was kind of the non, you know, automatic qualifier kind of bowl there. But I think the standpoint of, hey, let's see if what is TCU as far as they'll play a tough, you know, hard nosed, you know, Big Ten football team there in Wisconsin. So I think we'll see how good, you know, TCU is. So I think that's an interesting matchup.
Now, Ron, how about you? Which matchup are you looking forward to in terms of those BCS bowl games?
Well, you know, UConn is coming here to Phoenix, you know, for the first time in school history. So that matchup with Oklahoma is going to be very intriguing. You know, a lot of the professional prognosticators are predicting Oklahoma, you know, I'm going to use the word, you know, landslide again. They're going to win by a landslide. But it should be interesting to see if Stoops can get his guys motivated to play that's not in a national championship game, so to speak. Hasn't really fared well, so to speak. And if Oklahoma comes prepared to play and they're motivated, obviously, you know, talent-wise, they have the most NFL talent, you know, position by position. So it should be an intriguing matchup just to see which team shows up here in Phoenix.
Oh, it is a fair question. I think I'm one of those people that think Oklahoma is going to win in a landslide, but let's not forget they were a big favorite in the Fiesta Bowl over West Virginia. They were a touchdown favorite in the Fiesta Bowl against Boise State. They lost to Boise State. They got pretty much spanked, and the landslide was the other way against the Mountaineers. They couldn't deal with White and Slayton because they looked kind of unprepared. I'm actually interested to see the Sugar Bowl and see Ohio State take on Arkansas, that Big Ten power against the SEC power, the kind of second-place teams in those conferences, and those two quarterbacks, Terrell Pryor, Ryan Mallett, a pair of juniors. Let's see how they finish out those junior seasons, potentially their last game as college players. Let's go with the best prospect. Not the best prospect, but in terms of NFL prospects, guys, Kelron, let's start with you. Which guys got the most to gain with a big bowl performance?
I'm going to go with the tackle with Marcus Cannon, the big tackle out of TCU. He's a big body guy, and it's going to be interesting to see how he does in terms of matching up versus those speed rushers. You know, he's a guy that obviously, you know, has NFL potential and will be playing on the next level. But just in terms of his stock, this is a prime opportunity for him to kind of up his ante, so to speak, his stock, and ultimately take that to the All-Star week of January.
And Justin, how about you? Which guy do you think could really propel himself with one big, you know, spotlight game?
I think it's Jake Locker out of Washington. Obviously, there's been up and downs with the kid there, you know, and kind of, hey, he started, hey, he's the number one pick, and then some people said, hey, he's not a first-round pick, you know, and now it's kind of like, oh, maybe he's in the middle now. So I think as far as playing against Nebraska, you know, in that game, I think that's going to be a big test for him. They've got a great defense, you know, and they play well. So I think that's going to be, you know, interesting match to watch. And if he does well, he obviously keeps moving his stock up and then goes to the Senior Bowl and, you know, able to see what he can do. So I think, you know, these next couple of games for Jake Locker really is going to kind of, you know, cement where his draft status will be.
I'm actually going to go back to Cam Newton and the Heisman guy. And, you know, it appears now a lot of people think he's going to be a first-round pick, but I kind of look back to what Jamarcus Russell did in a big bowl game and vaulted himself from being, you know, kind of a mid-round guy to the number one overall guy. You look at what Mark Sanchez did, and he kind of vaulted himself up to being the fifth overall pick, you know, shredding Penn State in the Rose Bowl. So I think Cam, you know, while he's made a lot of ground already this year, I still think he could vault himself even higher if he does that on a national stage against Oregon and wins the national championship. All right, Justin, thanks a lot for joining us again, and we look forward to talking to you next week as we preview some of the bowl games that start next Saturday.
All right, we'll talk to you later, guys.
All right, thanks, Justin. All right, Kelron, we'll stick with you a little bit, and we'll jump back on the awards docket, and we'll flip to the defensive side of the ball. Obviously, that's your side of the ball. Played some linebacker there at Oregon State. I got to offer you my condolences to your Beavers missing a bowl this year. I think one of the biggest surprises for me in terms of teams who didn't make a bowl.
Well, yeah, I mean, it was a rough season for Beaver Nation. Obviously, with the injury of James Rogers, that was a tremendous blow offensively, and, collectively together. I mean, he was the team captain, obviously the team leader and the playmaker of the team. And, guys like Marcus Beaton, eventually stepped up, towards the latter end of the season. But nevertheless, I mean, we played a hell of a schedule. I mean, we played, five teams within the top 10 throughout the year. I mean, starting off with Boise and TCU and, ultimately, ended the season with the Oregon loss and obviously in the Civil War. But nevertheless, we're talking about a young team coming back in 2011 that's going to be very talented both on both sides of the ball. So, expect to be back in 2011. I mean, obviously, they should come in the preseason top 25 ranking. Katz and the Rogers brothers both coming back. It should be a great year for Corvallis.
All right, let's jump on those defense awards then, and we'll start with the Lombardi, which isn't really a defensive per se. It's a line award, and one offensive player is up for it, and that's Jake Kirkpatrick. But the other guys were Daquan Bowers, defensive end from Clemson, Nick Fairley from Auburn, and Adrian Claiborne from Iowa. Nick Fairley already did win this award. It was given out already. What's your take there? What have you given him the award, Kelron, and who do you think is the best pro prospect of that group?
Yeah, Daquan Bowers right now is the eventually top 5 or 10 pick. He's, coming out of high school, he was rated as the number one defensive prospect, and he's continuing that marking or that ranking rather. Coming to the draft. He's played phenomenal throughout the year. You can't block the man, with one person. I mean, he's close to first step, great hands, great hips, and he's going to be a long-time pro.
It's hard to argue with Bowers, but I'm going to stick with my guy Fairley there if I had to pick. But I think both of these guys are going to be very, very high picks. So, it's not going to be a lot of draft choices in between where those guys get picked. Moving on to linebacker. Von Miller is the Buckus Award winner. The other candidates there were Akeem Ayers out of UCLA, Bruce Carter from North Carolina, the hybrid Justin Houston out of Georgia, and the sophomore Luke Coakley out of Boston College. Kelvin, did you think Miller was the deserving winner, and who do you think is going to ultimately be the best pro in this group?
Yeah, I thought Von struggled in the beginning of the year, just in terms of, what they were doing defensively there in Texas A&M. A lot of times I've seen him dropping into coverage. He wasn't necessarily coming off the edge like, most people wanted to see. But, if I had to vote, I mean, obviously I've seen Hakeem play, Hakeem Ayers play live. And, he's a tremendous athlete. And, he's going to be probably the better pro out of all the guys that you mentioned. He's able to play in coverage. He's able to, come off the edge. I mean, he just does it all for that Bruin defense. And, once again, he's been my guy all year, and he definitely would receive my vote.
Yeah, it's an interesting group of guys, and you're right. I mean, Von Miller had an unbelievable ending to the season, last 4 or 5 games, but he really, didn't have a lot of impact early on in the season. A lot of that obviously was, like you said, the little change in defense as well as the fact that he was not 100%. He was fighting through a high ankle sprain. Jim Thorpe Award, we're going to the defensive backs. We got Prince Amukamara from Nebraska, T.J. Johnson from TCU, and LSU corner Patrick Peterson, who got my vote. I do have a vote for this award, so if Patrick Peterson got my vote, I had him 1 and Prince number 2. Which way are you going, Kelron, and who do you think is the best
pro?
Yeah,
I definitely go with Peterson. He's been explosive all year. He's a guy that you can leave on the island. He can cover that whole island by himself with really no help over the top with the safety. Also, being a dual threat as a punt returner and a kick returner, he's played phenomenal throughout the year. Prince Akmamora from Nebraska has also played phenomenal throughout the year. All three of those guys have played tremendous ball, but, my vote would definitely have been gone to Peterson.
All right, Kelron, thanks a lot for joining us again, and looking forward to talking to you again next week when we do a little more roundtable discussion.
Yes, sir. Let's do it again next week.
And that is Kelron Sykes, our super scout, former Oregon State Beaver, also former college football coach as well. And I just want to remind everybody, go to NFLDraftBible.com for all your latest draft news. And we got a guy from NFLDraftBible.com coming up in a minute or so, Joe Everett. Also, don't forget to go to our Twitter account. That's Twitter.com/CFBInsiders, as well as our BlogTalkRadio.com account. /CollegeFootballInsiders, where you can get our latest podcast on location from the William Campbell Award. A lot of great guys were there that we were able to sit down and speak to in person here in New York City. And don't forget, here on All Access Football Radio on the Fantasy Channel every Sunday, 8 o'clock, our Fantasy Football Insiders, Rick Saratella, Ralph Mancini, and Ross Mandel, the three R's, every Sunday getting you ready for your fantasy football day. Now we're bringing on Mr. Joe Everett, who does our mock drafts. He does the stock report, stock up and stock down, and that's what we're going to talk about today. Hey, Joe, how's it going today?
Real well. It's Thursday, getting ready for that Colts-Titans game, but definitely stoked to talk some college football.
All right, Joe, you know, now that we've seen, you know, the season's not completely over. As I said, we got one regular season game remaining, Army-Navy, plus all the bowl games. So there's still an opportunity for guys to kind of make up for what they didn't do in the regular season, or maybe go up against a big opponent and not look so sharp and see their stock drop. But we've got 12 games worth of tape and data now with the regular season mostly behind us. Give me three guys that you think really helped themselves this year and you know, mark up high on your stock up report.
Well, I'd like to start with the guy you and Kelron were just talking about, Von Miller. He did have a rough patch at the start of the year, but like you mentioned, not only the high ankle sprain, the switch in defense, but, you know, the bottom line remains, when you lead the nation with 17 total sacks on the year, you are a marked man, and, you know, offensive coordinators game plan for that kind of thing, and really closed the season strong, like you said, at 9.5 sacks, 14.5 tackles for a loss. The guy is extremely disruptive, and I like the Butkus Award winner. It's going in Mr. Miller's trophy case, I think, for good reason. He's going to be very appealing to 3-4 teams that are in need of an edge rushing backer, some coverage ability, but his best asset, of course, is that first step he's got. Basically, as close as any player in the nation, I think, of being a lock in that first round, just because of what the league is becoming. All teams are in need of that dominant pass rusher.
Yeah, I know a team that's near and dear to my heart, the New York Jets, and especially the way they looked on Monday night, they could sure use a guy like this who can get after the quarterback off the edge. And, yeah, he did help himself a lot, finishing strong. As, you know, most of the credit to Texas A&M's strong, strong finish and knocking off ranked opponents like Nebraska and Oklahoma goes to the change of position at quarterback, with Ryan Tannehill taking over for Mr. Mistake Gerard Johnson, who seemed to throw pick every other throw. But as much as that was a key, was Von Miller stepping up. I mean, they completely shut down Nebraska. That was a very low-scoring game, and they terrorized Oklahoma in the red zone, forcing them to settle for field goals, forcing them to turn the ball over. And Von Miller was just all over the place in that game, not only against the pass in terms of sacking Landry Jones. I know he even made a big fourth-down stop in that game against the run, so he's definitely finished the season very strong. Who else do you got on your stock up? Who really helped their stock this year, Joe?
Well, I think it's Ryan Broyles from Oklahoma, especially when you consider how crowded this wide receiver class is. It's full of talented pass catchers in the junior and senior class, but really Broyles has distinguished himself. It's 106 catches in the games he did it in. That's 9.6 catches per game. He's just showing that ability. I mean, we all knew he was a great kick returner and how dynamic his speed is. He's got the extra gear, but he's really showed off this year without Bradford and Landry Jones. I mean, he's still running a full route tree. He's extremely quick out of his breaks. And while he doesn't have the same size as a Baldwin or the Green kid or Julio Jones, he has that ability to get open, I think, that will translate well into the pro level. Probably one of the best route runners from this class, I think, especially if he's in that conversation. I think there's going to be a lot of teams with experienced quarterbacks that will want to have him in their wide receiver core.
Two questions quick on Broyles, Joe. One, what round do you slot him in? And two, do you think he's He's an outside receiver. Do you think he's going to be more of a slot guy at the next level?
He is likely more of a slot player at 5'11", under 200 pounds, but quick in and out. He could work that intermediate passing game to precision, killing you close within. The NFL likes a lot of receivers like that, so I do see him as a slot, and because of that, it is still a ceiling is probably the second round. But once again, this is a guy, a very special athlete that could have some nice postseason workout numbers, too, that could help elevate that stock.
All right, Joe, that's two out of your three staying both in the Big 12 Conference. Who's your third guy stock up for the season?
Well, I'm going over to the Big Ten, my neck of the woods. The last time I was on, I brought J.J. Watt up, and apparently for good reason, he has just continued screaming up draft boards. He finished regular season now. I think it's 21 tackles for a loss, 7 sacks, I mean, three block kicks on the year, actually, and 1 interception that was off of his own tipped pass. He is posing at 6'6", 285 is what the big board's got him at, and he has just been living in the opposition's backfield every game. And what's most intriguing about this kid is the fact that he's a tight end prospect from Michigan. I mean, he transferred to Wisconsin and had to go through a position change, and now that he's been defensive end full-time for 2 years, we're seeing it pay off, not only at the Division I level, but he is now in that conversation of first-round defensive ends. The underclassman, I think, is just as talented, if not more so than some of the bigger-name prospects, because he is just imposing that five-tech position, I believe, is calling his name at the next level.
Yeah, so you led me right to where I was going to go. What kind of system do you think he's going to fit in best? He definitely looks like a 3-4 guy, don't you think?
Absolutely. You see him, you look at the game, and you see a more athletic version of Aaron Smith in Pittsburgh. But I mean, he can control who's in front of him. He can hold the point of attack. So absolutely, in those big physical 3-4 fronts, those are the teams that are going to be looking at him and in their front three, moving them all around, actually, just because he is very disruptive.
All right, Joe, I want to throw a name out there myself, and that's the man we spoke about a little bit earlier, Nick Fairley, the defensive tackle from Auburn, who won the Lombardi Award and is up there for a couple other awards still, I think. And you know, I just think he's somebody that you can argue maybe helped himself as much as anybody this season. Not really much on the radar, as I think he's going to be a high first-round pick. But, Joe, as you know, sadly, not everybody does help their stock. Which guys kind of hurt themselves this year and saw their stock fall with their play in 2010? Looks like we lost Joe. Hopefully he'll be calling back. I know he's got a couple of guys there that didn't help himself, and I believe one of them, not to give it away, but as we wait for Joe to hopefully dial back in, is the guy we spoke about in Jared Johnson, the quarterback there at Texas A&M, who I believe is still going to the Senior Bowl, if I remember hearing that right, but still definitely had a shaky season. In my eyes, I definitely saw Jared Johnson's stock go down in terms of what he did throwing the football. I mean, you know, just very shaky decisions, you know, throwing the interceptions. This is a kid who really ended last season strongly, regular season, not talking about the bowl. He was all right in the bowl, but really had a great, great finish with his play against Texas, the Longhorns, in that rivalry game, and outshone Colt McCoy. You can't deny that. He really outplayed him in that game and kept the Aggies in the game and made it a close one, even though A&M was a down team. But this year he just didn't have it. I mean, just every game, multiple interceptions once the cupcake portion of the schedule was over. And even just as concerning as that is, the arm strength didn't seem to be there the same way it was last season. Very inconsistent even throughout the game. A good indicator that his mechanics were probably sloppy and didn't have the proper footwork on a consistent basis, because, you know, all of a sudden you'd see a zip pass, and then the next time he tries to make a similar throw, you kind of see a duck that floats in there and doesn't quite show the same zip and polish on those throws. So I think that's definitely a concern with Jared Johnson. That's why some people project him potentially being moving and playing a different position, which would be, you know, interesting to see what happens there. Another guy that I know Joe is going to bring up was Jonathan Baldwin, wide receiver out of Pittsburgh, and I guess this is kind of why Baldwin went off a little bit when he complained the same day that Wonstad resigned, that he was unhappy with the way he was being used, implying that it seemed as if the staff wanted his stock to go down. So I guess if that was their goal, considered a successful strategy, according to Joe there, as his stock went down. I believe we have Joe. Joe, is that you back on the line?
Yeah, I'm back on Skype. Apparently my phone picked today to die. I apologize, Daniel. This is embarrassing.
No problem, Joe. I was filling in for you a little bit and told the people about Jared Johnson and started to touch on John Baldwin, who believes he was sabotaged a bit by the Pittsburgh coaching staff. So if you want to touch on those two guys, go ahead.
Well, I remember those quotes, and I do believe that there is a serious lack of intermediate routes that they had him running, and it really hurt his stats. It's the guy that was supposed to build on his great 2009 season, and really only five TDs, the 810 yards, it's just really hurting his stock. Now, he's still one of the more intriguing prospects just because of his size and ability athletically, but I think he's leaving an awful lot up to his combine numbers and postseason workouts, because the 2010 tape leaves a lot to be desired.
And how about Jared Johnson, Joe? Do you think ultimately he will get a shot to play quarterback in the NFL? Do you think he's going to get drafted?
I have my doubts. I've got him right now as a priority free agent, and I believe our the last update to the NFL draft Bible Big Board has got him as the 20th. QB, and I can't argue against it. It pretty much ruined his draft stock, and he may have to go the route of Matt Jones, except without credit cards and the illegal substances. Hopefully.
Hopefully. I have heard Gerard Johnson sing, and he did pretty good. I think he was singing a little Blackstreet song. You can find it on YouTube. So he may actually have a better fullback career than Matt Jones did. And finally, you know, those are two of the three guys. Who's your third guy, Joe, in terms of going down? Who else's stock went down this season?
Well, the final guy, it's got to be Marvin Austin. I think, you know, you could name a number of prospects from the North Carolina program, but the biggest faller, I've got to say, his senior prospect, who was basically the first of the UNC suspensions. Austin was rated as a potential top 10 pick in some preseason mocks and a lot of, you know, collegiate magazines. This is the guy to watch, pro prospect. Well, he's still going to get drafted, but I don't believe it comes until the mid rounds with the character concerns. And also, this is a guy that really needed to have a good showing in 2010 so that he had better tape, because without the positive film from this year, this is a guy that's not going to work out well. 300 plus, it's really going to fall where he goes in the draft at this point. And like I say, it's the first round is absolutely out of the question at this point.
Yeah, I got to agree with you on Marvin Austin there, Joe. And I think as much as stock down, it was blown opportunity to get your stock up, because he was still, in my opinion, heading into this year, more of a guy that we were enamored with his potential than his actual production. And he never got a chance since he didn't have, you know, since he hadn't done it to this point. I mean, he had a pretty good junior year, but he didn't have an explosive junior year. So this was his opportunity to have that kind of season and say, yeah, you know what? It isn't just potential. I can do it. I'm going to play like a top 10 pick. He blew that opportunity to show us what he could do.
No, absolutely, and it's going to cost him. I mean, who knows? The NFL team could get a great player there, but he's certainly got an uphill battle in front of him now.
Yeah, I got a feeling you're going to hear the term boomer bust often when describing Marvin Austin throughout the draft process. Joe, thanks a lot, and we'll be looking out for your columns on NFLDraftBible.com. I know you're probably going to be working on a new mock soon, as well as a new stock up, stock down report. So hopefully we'll be catching those throughout the bowl season.
Absolutely, and looking forward to talking again. Thanks for having me, Dan.
Thanks a lot, Joe, and that is Joe Everett, our man there at NFLDraftBible.com, who does a lot of great work in terms of scouting these guys throughout the season. Great addition to our team this year. And while we got about a minute or so remaining, just want to remind everybody about our Twitter account. That's Twitter.com/CFBInsiders. And don't forget to check out our College Football Insiders podcast. A lot of big podcasts this week on location that we were able to do here in New York City at the William Campbell Trophy. I'm talking about Christian Ponder, Sam Acho, Anthony Costanzo, Mike Muhammad, Owen Marasek, Mike Sherrard, Scott Tolzien, and Steven Wisniewski. A couple of them already up. A couple more will be going up tonight and throughout the week. Folks, I'm sorry I didn't get a chance to really jump into those BCS bowl games like I thought we would at the time at the top of the show, but we'll talk about those and some more bowls next week as we preview the bowl starting on next Thursday. First bowl game is December 18th. That's a week from this Saturday, pitting BYU against UTEP in the New Mexico Bowl. So the bowl season is about to get started. Enjoy your football weekend.